Alright, I hope you guys had a good afternoon, whatever you ended up doing. I have a couple of, I know where it's after supper, I know it's getting dark earlier now, so I have a couple of things built in tonight to kind of keep us awake and alert and moving, giving you a chance to talk and do some things. So hopefully that helps us as we are together this evening. So I wanted just to kind of look back at session one and what we did there, kind of catch us up and bring us into what we're going to talk about tonight. So the first session today, we took a look at what we turn to. We went through a few ideas. It wasn't an exhaustive list, but hopefully, even as we were sharing this morning, or if you had time, if you've taken time to reflect since then, you've kind of started to think of what are some of those things that I tend to turn to when I have this need or this emotion. And so the goal for this morning was simply to bring awareness. Okay, I didn't get this sense, but I just want to say it just to be safe. The goal from this morning was not to point out how we're failing all day, every day, by turning to other things. The goal wasn't to bring about condemnation or to make it to feel like we're not measuring up in some area, but it was simply to bring awareness. Because sometimes we don't know a need or a problem exists until we take time to identify it and to look at it. And so that's what we were trying to do this morning, just to take some time to identify some of those things that we turn to. And so what we're going to do tonight in the second session is we're going to do two things. First, we're going to kind of do them simultaneously, but we'll look at why we turn to some of those things. And so what is that motivation? What is it that's motivating us to turn? And then at the same time, why turning to Jesus is better than those things that we turn to. I love the second song that we sang. There are a couple of phrases that as we were singing, I was like, oh, yes. So we were talking about his name, and a couple of those lines say, nothing compares to this. That really is the goal of this weekend, that we begin to think that nothing that we turn to compares to turning to Jesus, compares to coming back into intimacy with him. Nothing compares to being in relationship with him. Nothing compares to turning to him. You have no rival. You have no equal. And as we get into this, especially towards the end, hopefully as we get a picture and a sense of who God is, and we're reminded of his character, and we're reminded of his goodness, then we can say, well, of course, why wouldn't I turn to him? Because this is who he is, and this is the way that he can meet me, and this is the way that he offers strength, and this is who he is when we turn to him. Now, sometimes there can be legitimate things that drive us to turn to other things around us. We can have a legitimate need, a legitimate emotion. We live in a broken world. Okay, so it's not wrong to have this need to turn somewhere. That is one of the effects of sin. Sin has broken our lives, it's broken our souls, it's broken our relationships. And so because of those things, we turn. My hope and prayer is that by the end of this weekend, we can hear Christ's voice in our mind saying, you think that's good? I'm better. You're looking to that for satisfaction? I'm the one that will satisfy you. And that we can hear him draw us and invite us to come into his presence and to build relationship with him. So first, we're going to start with a few feelings that motivate us. And so instead of me just kind of going through them one at a time, I'm going to let you guess what they are by playing the game of Taboo. Okay? My buzzer broke, so we don't have a buzzer. I can buzz in your ear. Or they have figured out what key it is in, so if one of you girls was to come and be the buzzer, you can do that. But what I need is I just need one person. So I have five cards right here that I need one person to give the clues. Okay, so remember with Taboo, you have one word up here that you're trying to get people to guess, and there are five words that you cannot say in order to describe and tell them what these words are. Okay, so you can't act something out, but you're speaking, you're talking. You're going to have 2 minutes, and then we'll just see. And we're going to play it like collectively, okay? So one person giving the clues. Okay, great.
Right? English teacher, we got work. No, now there's more pressure.
Okay, so I'm going to hand this to you whenever you're ready. Flip it up so she can start getting clues. All of these, I'm going to help you out with this. You can fill in the blank. We're talking about feelings. I am blank. Okay?
So do I have to say I am or can I just...
No, you can just... Yeah, you just get clues.
Cool. So, when you walk to your car at night, you may feel...
Oh, good.
If you were at home...
Alone.
Can you...
Lonely. There you go. I am.
Oh, no, I said alone. Does that count? Okay. Sorry. Oh, that's a hard one. Okay, I'm going to go weird with this. So, if you're at the store and don't have any money, that's because you did this to this.
Lost.
You're embarrassed.
Oh, and now you have a new coat. Because you...
Stolen.
You're dead.
No, you don't have money because you... telling your kids something and they don't know what they're doing, so they're feeling
confused.
Every new mom feels
overwhelmed.
That was good. I was thinking, how are you going to do it? And I would have done money too, so that was perfect. Had nothing to do with the emotion, but okay. Right, exactly. Okay, so we're going to do them in a little bit of a different order. But let's talk through those. Okay, so all of them together, I am exhausted, I'm scared, I'm confused, I'm spent, I'm lonely. Have you ever felt any of those things? Those are some things that drive us to turn to other ones. So let's talk through them one at a time. The first one, if you want to fill in your blank there, is fear. Okay, so there are lots of reasons why we are fearful at times. Sometimes we get bad news that makes us fearful. We kind of think into the future and think, what if? What could happen? What might happen? Sometimes that brings fear about. Sometimes it is just an unexplained, I don't know really what's going on. I don't know why I'm anxious. I don't know why I'm scared, but I am fearful at this part in this season of my life. And so think about when you are afraid, what are some things that you turn to? Maybe you turn to information. That's one of the first places I turn. Okay, so I'm afraid. I'm going to figure this thing out. I'm going to kind of understand as much as I can about it, and then I can have facts, and I can have truth, and I won't be afraid. Okay, sometimes we can turn to that. Maybe you go and you find a person to talk to, and you want to talk through these feelings and these emotions. Maybe you want to get encouragement from them. Maybe you find a way to escape. You're like, I am afraid, but I don't want to think about the future. I don't want to think about being fearful. And so I'm just going to get busy in my hobby. I'm going to be really productive today. And as long as my hands are busy and my mind's busy, then I don't have to think about it. And I don't have to experience the fear. But we are all tempted at some time to take matters into our own hands. But what happens if instead of turning to those things when we experience fear, we turn to Jesus? Isaiah 41:10 that you have there written in your notes says, "So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Look at all of those beautiful images and truth that are packed into that one verse. First of all, he promises his presence, for I am with you. Jeremiah has a tendency towards anxiety and anxiousness in lots of different situations. But as soon as Mark is there, his dad, for those of you who don't know, as soon as Mark is there and he says, okay, let's go do this, anxiety is gone most of the time. Why? Because my husband is a big old guy, right, who's not scared of hardly anything. At least has that persona, right? But he gives him confidence simply by his presence, by being there, come on, we can go do this. And then it's enough to get Jeremiah's brain off of that thing and onto, okay, yeah, I can go do this. That's what God offers to us. He offers his presence to say, I am the God of the universe. I spoke creation into existence. I parted the Red Sea, and I'm with you. I'm here. He also, in this verse, promises strength. He promises help. He promises that his hand is what is upholding you. So think of the image of God's hand being the one that's coming along and holding you up. Okay, so when we are fearful, if we come to a verse like this and we meditate on it, we think and picture all those things that God is doing with us and for us, if we memorize it and say it, if we use a verse like this to turn us to God and to enter into relationship with him, then we end up in a far different place than if we turn to information and to friends and to the other things that are around us. Another feeling that sometimes drives us to things is the second one there, confusion. Okay, so maybe a time in life when life is just an upheaval. Maybe there are decisions going on. Maybe there are changes in jobs, moving, lots of things that you are having to make decisions about. You're not sure what to do, which way to go. Now, my natural tendency is when this happens is to either dive in and figure it all out, which I shared about this morning, or just to do nothing, because I get so overwhelmed, and there are too many options. But what does God promise? We see there in Psalm 32 and verse 8, the Lord says, I will teach you the way you should go. I will instruct you and advise you. So when times are confusing and I have decisions to make, instead of diving into research, instead of turning to information, instead of throwing up in my hands and saying, whatever, I don't even know where to start, which I have said many times, what if I turned to God and said, God, you promise that you will teach me. You know what the brilliant thing in that is that God sees the future. He's already in the future. He's preparing the future right then for me. He desires for me to know his will. He desires to come alongside and to teach and to instruct and to advise. And when he's doing that, when he's teaching, it's more like a mentorship. Okay, so he is right there. He's with me. And it's interactive. Okay, so I'm talking. I'm listening. He's talking. He's guiding. And it builds that relationship and it builds trust and dependence. The third emotion there that sometimes we can experience that drives us somewhere is depletion. Okay, so when you are depleted, you have used up all of your emotional energy. You're drained mentally. You're drained physically. You're at the end of yourself. Probably at some stage of life, all of us or most of us have been depleted at even just for a certain season of life. And when that happens, when I'm depleted, I find that it's easy to turn to what's safe. And it's easy to turn to what's easy, to entertainment, to friends, to food, to something to distract. Because those things are safe, they don't really require much of me. I can kind of zone out, and it doesn't require all the work and the thought of anything else. But Isaiah 40, verse 31 says this, that they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. When it says right there, but they who wait for the Lord, wait can also be translated trust or hope. Okay, so when you're waiting for the Lord, you're trusting in him. You are turning to him and saying, God, I'm not going to look to all these things out here. I'm going to turn to you and trust in you. My hope is in you. My hope is not in the thing out here to distract me. My hope is not in looking to people. My hope is in you. I also love the way the message paraphrases the phrase, mounted with wings like eagles. It says that he will make you soar as eagles. Have you ever watched an eagle soar? Doesn't it look pretty effortless? I've loved watching big birds soar since I was a little girl and thinking, wouldn't it just be wonderful to like ride the wind way up high, have a view of so much, and it just looks effortless. That's what God is able to give, not because of circumstances. He might not change the circumstance. You might still feel that that thing that is depleting you might still be in your life. But what he does is he says, come to me and I will give you strength. You will run. You will still run through this dark time. You will still face this pain, but you will run and not be weary. You will walk and not faint. Why? Because I'm the God that can do the impossible. I can get you through this time as you look to me and as you come to me. The next one down there, loneliness. Okay, so when you're lonely, a lot of times it's because you're isolated, you have lack of connections. We're looking for a close friend or a spouse or a family relationship, so it could be in a lot of different areas. I would say that there are a lot of people right now, because of COVID, because of quarantine, because of things being different, that are experiencing loneliness. And I feel like a lot of that has to do with the things that we are used to turning to. When we are lonely, we can't turn to anymore. They've been taken away. We couldn't get together as a church. People are working from home. People are not able to go and have deep conversations. We're not able to go out and just go have fun and hang out. Now, there are ways, you know, so many months into it now, some things are lightening up. We're able to go back and do some of those things. But I feel like especially initially in March and in April, a big part of this was it was exposing those things that we turned to. And we are scrambling to find other things. But look what God says in Psalm 68, 5 through 6. The psalmist is really describing God here, and he says that he is the father of the fatherless and protector of widows. As God in his holy habitation, God settles the solitary in a home. And what I love about this picture here is that you see God himself filling the roles that are missing in these people's lives. He is the father to the fatherless. He can go and he can fill that role that is causing that loneliness. He is the protector of widows. He settles the solitary in a home. When someone is alone, they need companionship, they need that family unit, he can provide that, and he can also be that in and of himself. And then the last one here is fatigue. Okay, so fatigue, when you're physically tired, when you have lack of energy, a lot of times when we have that need right away, when we have that feeling, we think of, why am I feeling this and what remedy do I need? Did I not get enough sleep? I need a nap. And did I have not have enough food? I need something else. So we look for whatever it is that's going to meet that physical need. But Jesus says in Matthew 11:28, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Jesus is the real source of rest. His rest is deeper. I also love Psalm 127:2. It says, for he gives to his beloved even in his sleep. As we are even sleeping, God is giving to us. He is able, just as I shared when I was getting ready to leave back in June and drive all day the next day, he was able to give in a shorter amount of sleep than what I'm used to, the strength and the energy to be able to go and drive the next day. He gives what we need when we are looking to him and when we are turning to him. All right, so those are some emotions, some feelings that we have that motivate us to turn to other things. The next category of things that we're going to look at are some needs. Okay, so we're going to play taboo again with this one. Does somebody else want to come up? And, okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay,
soon.
I know.
Okay.
All right, here she goes.
Oh, do you have to give them the, like,
the
category? Yeah,
the category. Oh, yes. So I need to blank.
I need to blank. I need to, oh.
make it less hard.
Simplify.
I need to. Yeah.
Okay. I need to, maybe this, you think it's not, I need to not put my focus on other things. There we go. I need to just get in my car and drive. I need to gosh darn it. I need to give up.
Quit. Leave.
Let go.
Surrender. There we go. Thank you. And I just need to let a bunch of water come out of the top of my
That was great. Okay, so I need to escape. I need to cry. I need control. I need to simplify. I need to be distracted. Okay, can you relate to some of those needs that sometimes we have day in and day out? All right, let's talk about them, and then let's talk about what God offers us when we're feeling those things. The first one there is distraction. Okay, distraction by definition is anything that divides the attention. So it can either divert your attention away, it can be something that entertains, it can be something that amuses, but anything that causes you to turn away from whatever it is. And the problem with turning to other things when you are distracted is that once you get done with that other thing, you're right back where you started again. Okay, nothing has changed. You're right back to the problem. Isaiah 26:3, though, says, "You keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you." So this verse I love because it tells us what to do with our distractions. So our mind is wanting to divert. It's wanting to go here. It's wanting to be entertained. It's wanting to talk. It's wanting to do these things. But instead, God says, fix your mind on me. Come to me, return to me, and put your mind on me. Don't put your mind on the problem. Don't put your mind on escaping it. Don't try to divert away from it, but come to me. And then what does he do? He brings peace into the situation. Again, nothing might change. You might still have that issue that you're wanting to get away from, that you're wanting to distract, to have a distraction from, but in the midst of it, when we come to God, he offers peace in the midst of turmoil, and he changes you so that then you can re-enter that situation in a different place. The second one there is sometimes we need escape. We need to just slip away. This word is really reminiscent of the word for retreat, okay, to withdraw, to get away, to find a refuge, to find a safe place. And God wants to be this to us. We used this verse this morning, Psalm 119:114. You're my place of quiet retreat. Okay, so instead of trying to escape our problem by going out, we find that retreat and that withdrawal and that safe place in God himself. The third need then that motivates us is sometimes we just need to cry. We just need to let it all out. And there is something cleansing, there is something freeing from just having a good cry. Sometimes though we can feel embarrassment in it, feeling like I shouldn't need to cry, or this is showing weakness in some area, where really that's not the case at all. God says, come to me with your tears. God doesn't look down on us because we can't handle it. God doesn't look down on us because of these emotions that are so big, this release that we need. Psalm 56:8 says, "You have kept count of my tossings, put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your book?" Isn't that beautiful? That even when we are at our wits' end and we can't even articulate anything, maybe we can't even identify why it is that we're crying, that we're overwhelmed, that Jesus has come to me and I'll catch your tears. Like, that offers such companionship, that offers such love, that offers such acceptance, that in our time of greatest need, he sees and he cares. And so why not, instead of just trying to go and cry it out and get away and be alone, why not come to him and say, Jesus, I am just undone. I can't handle this. I can't do this. Here are my tears. Would you catch them? Would you hear my groanings? And would you be to me what I need you to be? The next one, sometimes we need control. We want to find something that we can direct, we can count on, we can have agency over, and yet God calls us to humility, to trust in his sovereignty, even in the midst of life that is going crazy. I love Exodus 14:14. It says, the Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Not running over here and trying to figure it out, not running there and getting what you need, but you need to be still, and you need to be turning to me, and you need to be looking to me, and I will fight for you. I have so many times over the last 4 weeks trying to prepare for this weekend where this was the case. Times that I had set aside and that then got interrupted. Times that I had planned on and then some big thing came up. Times that I planned to stay up late to work, and then Jeremiah could not fall asleep to save his life. Times that I said, okay, I'm going to wake up early because he's going to bed late. I will wake up early, and then lo and behold, he wakes up early. Or I lay awake all night and can't sleep at all. And finally, I got to the point where I said, okay, God, I'm going to try to plan this thing for tomorrow or for in 2 days. But God, you have to make it happen. Like, I can't just keep trying to make this time happen here and make this time happen there and be counting on these things. God, I'm going to be still. And you fight for me. You get my boy to sleep. You get me out of bed in the morning. You guard this time from anything else going crazy in my life in these 4 weeks, please. Like, you have to do it. And that reliance and that dependence is sometimes in life what it takes. Because we can't control things as much as we want to, as much as we sometimes think it's our responsibility to. Sometimes I feel like planning is good and is right, but at a certain degree, like I was saying this morning, who's behind that planning? God is. And so am I really relying on that planning and my schedule and these things happening the way that they look like they need to? Or am I trusting the God who is behind it all? The God who, what usually takes 4 hours, all of a sudden pours out in an hour. God can do things that we don't expect, that aren't natural, when we look to him and when we trust in him. And then the last thing that we need right there is simplicity. So simplicity is, sometimes we just need something to be easy when life is complicated. Sometimes there is a sea of things that are unknown around us, and we just need something to be known. And I love this verse in Isaiah 30:21. It was one of our, in college, it was one of our key verses for one of the years that I was in school. And it says, and your ear shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it, when you turn to the right or when you turn to the left. And I love that image of, I'm walking and all I need to hear is one voice. Right? I need to know just what is next. I need to know, is it left? I need to know, is it right? I'm listening for that one person, that one voice, that one thing to do, and I can forget about all these other voices, all these other things, all this other distraction. And so when we need simplicity, it's not just trying to make life simple. It's not trying to declutter things ourselves and get rid of stuff. It is turning to God and saying, God, I want your voice to be the supreme voice. God, I want relationship with you to be what is priority. We are never going to get away from these feelings and from these needs. There's never going to be a week, there's never going to be a month where all of a sudden we're not fearful, where all of a sudden we're not lonely, where all of a sudden we don't feel like we need to control and plan and organize. Those things aren't going to go away, but what we do with them is what defines the trajectory of our lives. What we do with these feelings, what we do with these needs, where we turn, is what determines the kind of women that we become. God, in the midst of all this, wants to be our refuge. This is, that word refuge is a description that is used so much in the book of Psalms, over and over and over. In Psalm 7, verse 1, the psalmist says, O Lord my God, in you do I take refuge. Now, most of the time when I hear that word refuge, I think of like a big castle, right? Or something big and strong that protects, that offers shelter, that offers peace, that offers strength. But if you look up the word refuge, it is also any place that one, that someone goes to for relief or for escape. Okay, so most of the things that we turn to in life, we turn to for escape. We turn to for relief. And yet what God is saying is, I want to be your refuge. I want to be your relief. I want to be your escape. And so we make choices every day what we go to. When the house is loud and cluttered, when we get bad news, when our hearts are wounded, when we're tired, when we're sick, when monotony rules and we just need something different in our day and in our week, where do we go for relief or for escape? Do we turn to our phone for distraction? Do we turn to sugar for energy? Do we turn to something novel for diversion? Do we turn to friends for camaraderie or to a spouse for support? None of those things can satisfy what our soul is really longing for in those times and in those moments. I love the way the Message paraphrased that same verse, Psalm 7:1. He says, God, I am running to you for dear life. And sometimes without even knowing it, that's what we need. Like, we need life. We need life to be fixed. We need life to be good. We need that abundant life that Jesus talks about in the book of John. But life is not found in the things that I run to. Life is found in the person of Jesus Christ. And so only in turning and running to him can we find refuge. Can we find relief? Can we find escape? Can we find protection that our soul is seeking? If we go a few chapters further in Psalm to Psalm 11, you see another example of God being our refuge. And in this Psalm, chapter 11, David is fleeing. His friends have turned against him, and they are trying to find him and trying to kill him. And so his enemies are trying to kill him. And so what his friends say to him is, you need to go to those mountains. That they're nearby, they can see them in the distance. They can go to the mountains and hide there. And what David says at the very beginning of the psalm, in the very first verse, is, the Lord is my refuge. And then he continues to go and say, why are you telling me to go to the mountains? The mountains aren't going to be my refuge. The mountains can't hide me as well as God can hide me. The mountains can't be my refuge any better than God can be my refuge. And so I love the fact that he is literally running for his life. He is literally scared for his life. But in that moment, he realizes, I don't need to turn to mountains. I need to turn to God. Because he's my refuge. He's my safety. He is my place of escape. And so it is with you, whatever you run to. You might see this thing and say, I think I need that. But in reality, it can't shelter you any more than God can. It can't give you peace any more than God can. It can't offer you escape any more than God can. God is enough. His name is strong. His heart is kind. And his strength is powerful. He is the one that we need. If you have your Bible, I'd like you to open up to Psalm 31. And we're just going to close by reading through the psalm, noticing a few things that are in here. Psalm 31. This is another psalm that is written by David. So I'm going to read the first 8 verses here. And as I read these 8 verses, I want you to be listening and noticing descriptions of who God is. Okay, so how David describes God. And then I'm just going to have you call them out after we get through these 8 verses. In you, O Lord, do I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, deliver me. Incline your ear to me. Rescue me speedily. Be a rock of refuge for me, a strong fortress to save me. For you are my rock and my fortress, and for your name's sake you lead me and guide me. You take me out of the net they have hidden for me, for you are my refuge. Into your hand I commit my spirit. You have redeemed me, O Lord, faithful God. I hate those who pay regard to worthless idols, but I trust in the Lord. I will rejoice and be glad in your steadfast love, because you have seen my affliction. You have known the distress of my soul, and you have not delivered me into the hand of the enemy. You have set my feet in a broad place. So just call out, what are some descriptions of who God is or descriptions of what God has done for him?
A fortress.
A rock. A refuge.
Righteous.
He's righteous.
Steadfast loving.
Steadfast. He has steadfast love.
He's faithful.
He is faithful.
Rescuer.
He's a rescuer.
Truthful.
I love that last line. He has set his feet in a broad place. Not this narrow, rocky ledge that's going to collapse under him, but a broad place. Okay, so at the beginning of the psalm, David rehearses the things that he has known about God, the things that he has experienced God to be to him. And that's important because now we're going to read 9 to 13, and I want you to listen for the way that David is feeling in his life at this very moment. Okay, and again, we're going to call him out when we're done. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am in distress. My eye is wasted from grief, my soul and my body also. For my life is spent with sorrow and my years with sighing. My strength fails because of my iniquity and my bones waste away. Because of all my adversaries, I have become a reproach, especially to my neighbors, and an object of dread to my acquaintances. Those who see me in the street flee from me. I have been forgotten like one who is dead. I have become like a broken vessel. For I hear the whispering of many, terror on every side, as they scheme together against me, as they plot to take my life. So what is David feeling and experiencing?
Grief.
Grief. Sorrow.
Rejection.
Weakness.
Broken.
He's broken.
His strength is failing.
He's weak. He's forgotten.
He's afraid. He's dreaded.
Have you ever been able to relate to any of those? Yeah. Okay, so here is, he knew these things about God, and yet he's feeling this way right now. Doesn't mean he's weak, it means he's human. It's okay to feel those things. But let's look and see what he does. Right in verse 14, the very next verse. But I trust in you, O Lord. I say you are my God. That word trust can be also be translated hope or wait or turn. Okay, but I trust in you, O Lord. I hope in you, O Lord. I wait for you, O Lord. I turn to you, O Lord. Yes, I feel this way. Yes, these people are chasing after me. The commentary says that in this chapter right now, his friends are the ones that are chasing him, trying to kill him, trying to find him. He's despairing of hope because now even his friends are turning against him. And yet he's saying, but God, I know who you are. I'm feeling this way, but I'm turning to you. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hand. Rescue me from the hand of my enemies and from my persecutors. Make your face shine on your servant. Save me in your steadfast love. O Lord, let me not be put to shame, for I call upon you. Let the wicked be put to shame. Let them go silently to Sheol. Let the lying lips be mute, which speak insolently against the righteous in pride and contempt. Oh, how abundant is your goodness, which you have stored up for those who fear you and worked for those who take refuge in you. In the sight of the children of mankind, in the cover of your presence, you hide them. Isn't that beautiful to think of? That God hides us in his presence. You hide them from the plots of men. You store them in your shelter from the strife of tongues. Blessed be the Lord, for he has wondrously shown his steadfast love to me when I was in a besieged city. I had said in my alarm, I am cut off from your sight. Okay, so what's happening right here is he's in this city, he is under attack, and all of a sudden he panics. he thinks, oh no, this is happening. It's the end. I set in my alarm. I'm cut off from your sight. Oh no, God's not even here anymore. I'm under attack. But you heard the voice of my pleas for mercy when I cry to you for help. God always hears, even when we think it's impossible, even when we're at the end of ourselves, even when we think, okay, this is just, there's nothing else, there's no hope, I'm lost, I'm in despair, God hears. He hears our cry. When we turn to him, he's merciful. When we turn to him, he hears our cries. Love the Lord, all you his saints. The Lord preserves the faithful, but abundantly repays the one who acts in pride. Be strong and let your heart take courage, all you who wait for the Lord. Again, there's that word, okay? It can be hope, it can be trust, it can be turn. So be strong and let your heart take courage, all you who turn to the Lord. Because you're going to find him to be the God in verses 1 through 8. You're going to find him to be a refuge. You're going to find him to be a fortress. You're going to find him to be strong. You're going to find him to cover you with his presence. You're going to find him there every single time when you turn to him. How our lives will be different as we practice turning to God instead of to other things. Not just turning to God in the major crisis times of life, but turning to him in the mundane, sometimes seemingly inconsequential moments of our day that are really the things that build our habits, that build our relationship with God, that build our trust in him, that build our dependence in him, time after time after time, day after day, week after week. That's where habits are formed, it's where trust is built, it's where dependence is strengthened and relationship is deepened, because we are coming back to what we were created for. We were created for intimacy with God. We were created for relationship with him. And so God blesses us when we live the way in which he hasn't intended us to live. God's nearness is for our good. God's nearness is what brings wholeness into our lives. When we are able to turn our eyes to him, when we're able to look full into his wonderful face, the things of this world grow dim. The allure of productivity, the allure of hobbies, the allure of people, the allure of all these things that we turn to grows dim, because God is so much greater and so much bigger and so much richer and so much more wonderful than those things. He has what we long for. He has what we hope for. And he promises to give it and to give it in abundance when we come to him and return to him. So again, for this evening, there are some reflection questions. They're in your notes just to kind of help you think through, why do I turn to some of these things? What would it look like for me to turn to God? So if that's helpful for you, I would encourage you to do that. If it's not, I would still encourage you to find some time and some way to interact with God this evening. If you go to bed early, wake up early in the morning and do it then. But sometimes just to say, God, I want this. I want this experience that David had in Psalm 31 to be reminded of who you are, and that when I'm feeling this way, what do? I turn to you, knowing that you will be this to me when I need you to be. Let's pray. God, thank you for your character, and thank you for the way that you accept us where we are. God, thanks that in spite of the way that sin has ripped us apart from your presence and from even at times desiring to come into you and feeling at times ashamed to come to you, God, that you, through Christ's death on the cross, offer redemption of those things. That you offer a way for our souls to be put back together, that you offer deep healing. God, what a wonderful thing to look forward to in heaven one day, of being fully restored and fully who you created us to be. But God, even in the day-to-day right now, we want to be women who begin to experience what it is to live in your presence, to experience what David experienced here, that even when life is hard and when we can't sleep at night and we're tossing and we're turning, that we bring our tears to you when we're scared and when we're lonely and we don't know what to do, that you become our refuge, that you become the strong tower that we can run to, that you become the one that enables us to soar on wings like eagles, that you give strength to us when we are weary, that you cause us not to faint even as we trudge through this life and trudge through this world. And so, God, I pray that you would give us just a renewed vision of who you are, the way that you desire with yourself and with your character to meet the deep needs and longings of our heart and of our soul. God, might we turn to you. Would you help our hearts to take courage as we turn to you, to learn how to run and how to find comfort and solace in you and in you alone. In Jesus' name, amen.